We are indeed, of course, further along in lesson 6 than I've got shown on the board here, but just to let you know that we are in lesson 6. That's where we're looking at. And actually, according to the mark that Linda has in her book, we're here on page 24, just finishing up the Arabian Desert. Most of you have probably heard of Google Earth, which shows satellite images from space. So what I wanted to look at is that a lot of us have a tendency to think of Israel as a big country. It just stands alone. But really, when we look at it, as we've looked at, the fact that it's only about 150 miles long and about 30 miles wide makes it pretty small. I mean, it fits in any number of our states into just a small corner of them. Now, if we travel around the world here and go over to the other side of the world, and so now we've gone around to the other hemisphere of the world, and you can see Africa here. You can see the Arabian Peninsula. The Arabian Peninsula here, Africa, of course, here, Europe and Asia over here, India sticking down into the Indian Ocean, of all things, over here. And Israel's right about here. And here is the Sinai Peninsula with the Gulf of Aqaba and the Gulf of Suez right here going down into the Red Sea, which empties out into the Indian Ocean. Now, when we zoom in on these things, we realize that a lot of history took place in a very small area. Get in a little closer here. And if I show us Mount Hermon, for example, because we consider that to be sort of the northern extent mostly of Israel. So here we show Mount Hermon right here. Now if we take and put Mount Hermon up at the top here and look, we see here that we've got the entire land of Israel from here down to about here. What's that right there? The Dead Sea. And this one? Sea of Galilee. And up here, if there were a lake, what would that be? Lake Hula. That's right. All right. So now that we've zoomed way in, let's zoom way out again now that we've got Mount Hermon placed and see that it's just a speck in the middle of space, as it were. And that's where everything essentially in the Bible took place, certainly in all of this area right here. So it's really a small place, but it's really a very critical place. When we get to thinking about it, too many times we have a tendency to think of these places in isolation, but when we look at it and we put, for example, borders on this map, you see, of course, that Egypt is right here. And Chris and I were discussing this before class. You just go straight across and you get to Iraq. I've always thought, well, Iraq's up there somewhere, but it's straight across from Egypt and straight across from Israel, of course. So there's Syria, here's Turkey, here's Iran, here's Afghanistan, and then India over there, then Saudi Arabia here, and then the Emirates down here. So, you know, when we look at this, We have a tendency to focus in so closely on just Israel, we lose sort of track of where in the world we are. If we take and once again zoom in a little bit on here and look, for example, at the distance from Egypt over here to the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. If I just map this out and just draw a line from, say, the middle of the Nile Delta. So if I just go almost straight east over here to the confluence of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, you see that that's about 1,000 miles. So this thing maps it out. It's about 1,000 miles. And so it would be great to go over here and just go straight across. But as you can see, just from the looks of this area over here, it's not a particularly hospitable area to be in. So if we look at it, And we zoom out just a little bit more, we realize that this, the whole area from the edge of the map over here all the way down to here, a vast majority of northern Africa, all the way across the Saudi Arabian Peninsula and over to here, is all just desert. Very different from what we know. As I mentioned last week when we lived here in Egypt, that we saw desert like we'd never seen before, and we were from the desert. So the thing is that you get out here away from the fertile Nile Valley, and it's just, all it is sand and rock. That's Very little vegetation at all. You get out here in the middle of Saudi Arabia, as we've discussed already, we realize that there are a certain amount of rainfall that occurs in this area. And you can see that even though there's a lot of sand-looking stuff here, you can see that there's some greenish things. If you zoom in, you'll see that there's cities and vegetation and stuff over there. So they get a bit of rain, but they're certainly not going to get as much as Seattle, for example. And so that's sort of where we are in the world. And it's good to get a good idea of what we're talking about when we talk about this. So this little stick of land right here is really at quite a crossroads, however. So if I get this out here where I can see the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula, the whole of the Bible story essentially is contained in this area that we have on the screen right now. All right, we wanted to look at some of the things in this chapter that we've looked at before. So we are in the middle of the discussion about the Arabian Desert, and we've already talked about Mesopotamia, and we've talked about, as I say, the Arabian Desert, and so that puts us then on page 24, about at the end. We're talking about these huge lava beds. Notice at the end of the paragraph that that Mickey went over before on last week, said, thus the Arabs still play the most prominent role in the politics of the area today. And of course, given that this book was written quite a while ago, I think we're much more familiar with the Arabs now than we were at that time. But he says there's huge lava beds immediately east and northeast of the land of Canaan. Now, if we go back to Google Earth here, there's an interesting thing that you'll see right here. If you can see my cursor, you can see something that looks black. Well, when you zoom in on that, you realize it's a huge cinder cone, probably the size of this entire city, maybe bigger. So for those of you that have been up and traveled up to Bishop, for example, you see all the cinder cones along 395 up there and all of the lava beds and things like that. So this huge cinder cone here, I wonder how big it is. Let's see if I go through the extent here, just straight across, well, 12 miles across, 11 and a half miles across. And of course, just as we have here, and as you see, if you go off across the desert out to Needles or the other one, Blythe, you run through all sorts of igneous intrusions and cinder cones and all sorts of lava flows and things like that. So as you look at this, you realize that all of this area right here is all lava flow. And it's essentially directly to the east of Israel, and it continues down here for a ways, these things. There's mountains right here, but all of these things are lava flow. And what that does is that if any of you have stopped by the side of the road, either on your way to Blythe or on your way up to Bishop, and thought about, especially in the middle of the summer, walking across those lava beds, I'm not sure that you'd think that that was something that you'd want to do. I was watching, what's the name of that program on HGTV? Selling Hawaii, where you go and watch them as they buy houses in Hawaii. And these people were down on the shore of Kauai, I guess it was, but it was obviously lava beds, and their dogs were running around on this lava. And I thought, you're going to be needing to treat your dog's feet after a while, because you know they were in their flip-flops. But I've walked on stuff like that, and it's not pleasant, especially in the summer. So anyway, so nobody ever went from Egypt, for example, straight across the desert over to the other fertile areas of the Fertile Crescent, but rather they had to go through here, the seacoast, as it were, or up to the eastern plateau on the other side of the Jordan River to even get to where there were people. The people that lived in this area of the Arabian Desert, of course, were just the Bedouins, the nomads that didn't really have any fixed villages, and they had tents to live in. I did zoom in on some of the things that are down here in the Arabian Desert, and I noticed that if you go down and look at a village, and I'm not sure whether they're villages or military installations, but anyway, but all of them had block fences around them, probably, as we would prefer to do, to stop the wind. But I wonder if some of it had to do also with protection, just to keep themselves protected from people on the outside. So now they're probably missile installations, who knows. But anyway, so that's why people didn't travel straight across from Egypt, for example, straight over to the rest of the Fertile Crescent. Let's see, we have this presentation that Mickey's been using with some modifications. And I think most of what we've talked about, or that's on these, is already that the Arabian Desert, of course, is southwest of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. It covers almost 1 million square miles, and it's an extension of the Sahara Desert. I think someone pointed that out last week, that the Bedouin, they make up the Arabians, and they make their living by the way of the trade routes, which are not going through the middle there. Now, they want to point out here that the desert is not one vast sand dune. Now, portions of it I've seen have been one vast sand dune, but there are other places where they have mountains, where they have a little bit of vegetation, where people live, and such alike as that. You get over there to Afghanistan, it's got... Yeah. So, of course, that's much further to the east. So when I think about Iraq and Iran, I don't think about them being north and south of one another and Afghanistan being on the other side of Iran. I always thought that, you know, you always go east to get to Iran, but that's if you're going from the Mediterranean. So Afghanistan is on the other side of Iran. And so they're starting to get up into some pretty big mountains. They wouldn't be in the foothills of the Himalayas, but the foothills are not too many hundreds or thousands of miles away. So they're getting into these areas where we've got some topography to them, as opposed to the areas that we've got here that have very little. We're going to find mountains that the vast majority of them are 3,000 feet or less, which to us here are hills. I mean, we live at 2,500 feet here, so... So the Amorites came in around 2000 BC and established city-states from Egypt down over here all the way up to Babylon way up here. We've already talked about the lava beds. The Egyptian kingdom, of course, emerged during the time that the Sumerians were in Mesopotamia. And, of course, we're all familiar with the Egyptian hieroglyphics. They started about the same time as cuneiform writing started over here. And... there doesn't appear to be any apparent similarity between the two or no connection between the two. And, of course, if you look at hieroglyphics and compare that to cuneiform, you will see that there's no obvious connection. Now we get into Egypt. And so that'll be the next section in your book there, talking about Egypt. And so now we want to look over to Egypt. Now, if we go back to Google Earth again, and now zoom back in around this area here, we see, of course, Mount Hermon up here, nominally the northern extent of Israel at most times, the tip of the Sinai Peninsula here, and Egypt here. And the one thing that you can notice about Egypt is that if you look at it, you can see, as he mentions in the book, it's kind of like a lotus flower. The river branches out at the top, and it's got a long stem going down. So here you can see the Nile Delta and then the Nile River along here going down. How long is the Nile River? Really long. That's right. That's what he says in the book, really long. That's about 4,200 miles long. Starts supposedly at Lake, and I looked it up, not Tanganyika. It's one of these guys down here. It's this guy. And it's interesting to note that if you do some research on this, that people have not really found for sure the real source of the Nile yet. I mean, they've looked, but these countries are so, remote and so disturbed as far as their political conditions go that people can't really get in there a lot to look at these things. Okay, that's Lake Victoria. Yeah, that's it. It's they suppose that the Nile originates. Of course, there's a lot of originations to the Nile River. I mean, just like with the Dead Sea, there's rivers coming in all over the place that feed into this thing. And down here in the Sudan, where do we go? In the Sudan, it breaks off into two different rivers, or actually it merges from two different rivers called the Blue Nile and the White Nile. And I think there's even another one. But anyway, you can see that the river, well, you can't even see the lake on here, can you? There it is. It's right here. And so from here all the way up to the Mediterranean Sea is the Nile River, longest river in the world, longer than the Amazon. So we can realize that as we look at Egypt, that all of their agriculture, all of their living, everything was dependent on this river. And that's where they lived. And that's where they live now. The vast majority of people, of course, live in Cairo and Alexandria. There's a few that live down here in Abu Simbel and Fayoum, not Fayoum, but the towns that are down here. I'll come up with it one of these days. And you'll see right here one bright spot right in the middle, which is the oasis of Fayoum, just a little way south of Cairo. And you can see a little tidbit right here that looks like it's a tributary of the Nile River. And the reason that there was an oasis there is that before that particular tributary silted up, the Nile flowed directly into the Fayoum oasis, and the water was much higher there in that area. Now they have just a little lake there and a lot of desert. You can see that there's a bit of greenery around it because it's getting water infused not only from the lake but from the Nile, which is relatively close to it. So, but this is one of the portions of the desert that we've been out in, and it is just stark and abject desert, sand and rock. That's it. There's actually an old Roman fort out here that has all sorts of pottery sherds all over it. I think that's what this is. Dime. And Linda and I supposed at the time that this Roman fort here, that the reason that it just had hills all around it that looked like it was made completely out of pottery sherds is that when the wives of the soldiers that were stationed there actually got there and realized where they'd been stationed, they just started throwing dishes. So we've it is out in the middle of nowhere. So anyway, it's a very remote and desolate spot. And if you get away from the Nile, nothing grows. So that's all you've got there in Egypt is the Nile River and the Nile Delta. Randy. Land of Goshen's up here toward where Mansouria is. It was up in this area right here. It was supposed to be, I think, one of the more fertile areas of this particular delta. And I noticed that the writer of the book says that at one time there were seven rivers that branched out. Now there's only two. And actually, if you zoom in, you can see that, well, I've got political boundaries on here, but you can see that there's only, well, you can't see probably, but there's only two rivers branching off into the delta. So there's one here and another one that goes up here that go to the Mediterranean. So the land of Goshen was sort of in the center, but I think it was a little bit northerly and a little bit to the east of the center of the Nile Delta. Yeah. Yeah. You see all these dots on here? Looks like someone's done a bunch of saturation bombing. Those are actually towns. So Mansouria here, the big one, and then there's little towns all over the place that as you start to get in and look at them, you'll see that there's little towns all over. And now you can start to see the cropping that they've done, the fields that they've got, and the little plots of land that they have. All right. Interestingly enough, all of their activity seems to have occurred in the Nile Delta area, but the real seat of power was down here in Thebes and Abu Simbel. Anyway, I think it's down here in this area right here where it says Red Sea Governorate, which is a current name for that particular area of Egypt right now. But you'll remember the temples of Luxor and Thebes, and then Abu Simbel down here, right about in here. That's where they had those big statues of Ramses, that three guys sitting, and they were on a temple. And Lake, when they were building the Aswan Dam, wherever it is, right here, I think, when they're building the Aswan Dam, they realized that the temple at Abu Simbel would be flooded, be covered. And so they took it and moved it up the hill, up here, into the desert, away from where it was. Now, interesting thing to note about Luxor and Thebes is that apparently, according to the Egyptian religion of that time, their temples, the temples, were on the east side of the river where the sun rose, and their tombs were on the west side of the river where the sun went down. So when you look at Luxor, for example, the temple of Luxor is on the east side of the river. You go across, and there's that big tomb of Queen Hatshepsut. That's a big, long thing that stretches forever. And then you go around from that, you go to the Valley of the Kings back there. That's where they were all buried. They're on the west side of the river where the sun goes down. So the sun, of course, was one of their gods. And that's what they did. So as you go down the Nile River, you'll find all sorts of temples on the east side of the river and all sorts of funeral stuff on the west side of the river. You would recognize the Temple of Queen Hatshepsut if I showed it to you, but it's just a big long rectangular thing with columns all along it. As we were taking a tour of that, the guide said that taking pictures in that particular area was completely forbidden, as he was going like this. So. So as you put something in there, you can take pictures. And you go, oh, okay. David. Oh, yeah. That's true. Let's see if this thing will tell us how far it is. Just from the Mediterranean right here all the way down to the border right about there. Well, it says it's 660 miles. So it's a ways. I know that when we flew down there, it took a while to get there. So 600 miles, like going from here to, you know, just into New Mexico. Randy. That's my impression, though I'm not sure that we could look in the Bible and say that we could say that for sure. I mean, yeah, he was taken to them. And now, given that from the top to the bottom, obviously that's not as far as they need to go. It's over 600 miles. That's a long journey to make on foot or boat or whatever. Yeah, yeah. The winds, the trade winds, come from this way. So, as he mentions in the book, they put their sails up to go south, and they float to go north. Now, I have noted that they have their sails up all the time. So, I mean, you don't want to depend on the current of the river just to get to where you're going. So, it is, yeah. You can get a lot of boats on that river. So, Yeah, I get the distinct impression that what we're talking about is the northern part of Egypt here. When we talk about, you know, they went to the land of Goshen. That was obviously in the northern part. We're not seeing a whole lot of transitions here. It's like, well, what did Moses do? He went out and he spoke to his brethren and he smote the Egyptian and killed him, right? And then the next day, he went out to talk to two of his brethren that were striving with one another and discussed it with him. And they said, well, what are you going to do? Kill us like you killed the Egyptian yesterday? And he ran because he was afraid, because he knew that that word would get to the king. Well, if the king was 500 miles away, it wasn't going to get to him anytime soon. So I'm thinking that it was up there in where we've got Cairo showing right now. It was in that area somewhere that we're talking about. Very difficult to make a determination, I think, from the text that we have in the Bible as to whether they were in Upper Egypt or Lower Egypt. Now, where's Upper Egypt? It's to the north, to the south, right. And Lower Egypt is to the north. And why is that? Yeah. Yes, Chris. Yes. Right. And I think Ramses was up here right in this area, right close to the area of Goshen or right in it, you know. But the thing is that Moses was obviously talking to his brethren that were there who were living in the land of Goshen. And so they were right there. So wherever Moses was in the royal palace at that time, it had to be somewhere near the land of Goshen. Katie.
The map on page 22.
This map on page 22. Well, it does, it shows what? It actually shows Egypt from the Nile Delta all the way down to Thebes and whatever that is at the bottom. I can't make it out. What is that down there? Aswan? Okay. I'm unclear as to why he has that right there. There's no, as near as I can tell, any geographical feature that would cause us to delineate that right there. And I don't know that the Bible says anything about where the border of Egypt is. So I don't think that anybody actually wanted to be here anyway. As far as you'd want to go. Yeah. And, of course, this down here at Aswan, that's the southern extent of current Egypt anyway. Okay. So this is from here to here is that entire 600 and whatever it was, 60 miles. So that's only 200 miles, isn't it? I wonder if my... it does go down further. Okay, sorry. You know, when I did it the first time, and I measured from Alexandria over there to the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, it did it in centimeters. That was its default. Wow, that's a long way. All right, yeah. Actually, if we look at the map, and the border of Egypt is right here at this yellow line, and Aswan is right here. So there's still a ways to go in that. Somehow I find it hard to believe that that's only 200 miles. So, but we'll do it again. Yeah. Yeah. Where's Aswan? Aswan is right here. That says 433 miles from Cairo. So this guy here, does it say 200 or 300? 200. Now I have my doubts as to the accuracy of that scale. You can read that, right?
So you'd have to figure that the Israelites that were freed from Pharaoh's rule and the Egyptians pretty much in that upper or lower area.
Lower Egypt, yeah, in the Delta, in the Nile Delta. Yeah, right. It takes a while. Yeah, and as we look at it now, as I mentioned before, if we look at Alexandria, which is right on the Mediterranean, and Cairo, which is just about 100 miles south of that, we realize that the vast majority of people that live in Egypt lived in those two areas, and the people that live down or up south are a small number of people. Notice that he's talking here about 99% of the people live on 4% of the land. What we're saying is that if you take the boundaries of Egypt and look at 100% of it, that only 4% of the land is irrigable. And so it's irrigated by the Nile River, and that's all there is. There isn't anymore. John. They're mostly in one area. The ones that are most famous, of course, are the Giza pyramids. There were transitionary periods in there, and we had. Let me see if it'll show it on here. I think if I go back to the map that y'all have in the book on page 24 or 22, was it? 22, yeah. One place down there, just south of the delta, it's got a place that says Memphis. Now, it's not Tennessee. Memphis actually, during some of the periods, was the capital of Egypt. It was for quite a while, and probably that's what we're talking about here. Now there are a few pyramids in Memphis. There are no pyramids as grand as the Giza pyramids, the three that are there. But you can see there's one out down toward Memphis a little bit further south called the Step Pyramid. And it just goes like this. And what it was is that these people were trying to build pyramids. And you can see in some of these areas where they tried to build a pyramid, after they got up so high, it went because they built it at too great an angle. They built a Step Pyramid to try and correct that problem. And it's lasted for low these many years. There are a few other incidental pyramids in the area, but the Giza pyramids by far exceed anything that is seen anywhere else. Now, if you go down further into Upper Egypt, down by Luxor and Thebes, as you get on the boat and ride down there, you will see a number of temples on the side of the road that aren't nearly as spectacular as those at Luxor and Thebes, but they have built things, up and down the river on both sides. So quite a bit, but as we say, it's a fur piece, as it were, from one end of the country to the other. And Memphis, having been the capital, it probably was what we're talking about at that time, was that Memphis was the area that we're talking about, where the royal palace was. And then, as someone said, they built Ramesses and, what was it, Python or something like Python? That's two of the cities or storehouses that the people of Israel built. And so Ramesses was a big town, and of course it was built of all things for the king Ramesses to live in. All right, so as we said, of the whole area that Egypt considered to be theirs, 99% of those people lived on that little bit of land that's irrigated by the Nile River. And, of course, the Nile River Valley was, as we go down, it was anywhere from 1 to 24 miles wide, depending on where you were on the river. That's not including the delta. That's just including the Nile river basin itself. At the delta, it's at its widest point about 115 miles long. It's about 125 miles from Alexandria, which is on the Mediterranean Sea, down to Cairo, which is at the apex of the delta. Is that a correct mathematical term? So, it's, as we've mentioned before, it's the longest river in the world. 4,100 miles, pretty good guess. I've seen 42, and I've seen other people that said, well, we're finding other sources of the Nile River, and so now we're going to make it 43. And it's not like it's competing with anything. All right, the Egyptians, of course, they built all sorts of structures and monuments and the pyramids. Of course, we can see them. Of course, when the pyramids were originally built, they were faced all the way down with marble or something else. The only bit of that that remains is at the top of the Great Pyramid now. There's just a little bit of rock up there. I think it's on the Great Pyramid. And so they have signs all around the bottom of the pyramid that says, don't climb the pyramid. Because once you get up to the top, it gets kind of windy. And a lot of times, there have been deaths every year from people climbing the pyramids. The blocks are not, they're something you have to clamber up. They're not, I mean, you can't just step up. I mean, the blocks are, you know, they're this tall. You have to figure out how to get from one to the other in order to get up the pyramid. It's not just an easy climb up to the top of those. So they did a lot of things. The Egyptians, of course, were rather isolated. And so you've got desert to one side, you've got desert to the other side, you've got an ocean to the other. And literally, you've got a desert to the south of you to a great extent. So these people were isolated, but they had a great place to live. I mean, they had this nice river that flooded annually and brought renewing silt and topsoils from from way down in Africa up to them and made their lands much more fertile. And so they were able to raise a lot of crops and take care of themselves very independently. They, of course, started a lot of things. First ones to set up a 365-day calendar. Unmatched medical skills. Of course, when I think about performing delicate operations, I think about their embalming techniques and how they drilled holes in the heads of the pharaohs and pulled their brains out with hooks and things like that. I thought, that doesn't sound like a delicate operation, but I guess since they were dead, it really didn't make any difference. So it's very inaccessible. The government, of course, because of that, was united. They didn't have a bunch of city-states like Mesopotamia did, or later on Greece, or even Rome in some instances had city-states. There weren't any walled cities. There were no, he says here, there are no standing armies, which makes me wonder who went after the Israelites. I'm not sure what he means by that. And then if we just move over a little bit, I guess we're out of time though, aren't we? So next time we'll take up with the wilderness of Sinai and talk a little bit about the Red Sea and all of that sort of stuff. And we'll be done with this. And then I want to go into some of the questions. If you would be so gracious as to go back to chapter 5. And answer the questions at the end of chapter 5, because that's sort of a summary of the first 5 chapters, and we'll look at those. And then I have some questions also that the author of this slideshow has done on chapter 6 that will help us to refresh our memories regarding that. Is any comments or questions before we stop? All right, Wilderness of Sinai on Sunday.